reading this book for the first time as a parent right now, this line resonates in a different way. Like, oh, my son, how cleverly you defend yourself against all that might do you good.
Welcome to Talking Beasts.
From NarniaWeb.com.
Where we explore the world of C.S. Lewis.
And keep a watchful eye.
On the latest Narnia movie news,
this
is Talking Beasts.
This is Glumpuddle.
And I'm Jim Fan.
And I'm Rillian.
Chapter 14 of The Magician's Nephew. Rillian, at the end of the previous episode, you said that the dialogue in this chapter was great. So why don't we just pick it up right where we left off there? What are you referring to there?
All get what they want. They do not always like it.
Okay.
It is one of my favorite lines. And when I say my favorite lines, I should probably clarify. It's probably one of the most oft-quoted lines by myself, by my wife. Just so many things in life, you know. I mean, people can be victimized and things like that. But so many times, whether it's my own life or other people, I look at like really maybe negative things. And oftentimes they have themselves to blame. And oftentimes it's not something they screwed up when they were trying to. Like, they got the thing they wanted. They did the thing they were trying to do. It could be any number of things. Just use your imagination. And so many times people do get what they want, but it doesn't manifest in their lives bringing joy the way that they thought it would.
Awesome line. Yeah, definitely looking forward to later in this episode. I want to get into the, you know, the context of that, what Aslan's talking about there with the witch. But you saying that at the end of the previous episode, you saying that kind of made me go, yeah, there are some really good lines in this chapter. And so I've very quickly put together a list of the top four lines in chapter 14 of The Magician's Nephew.
Is mine one of them?
Yes, it is.
Okay. So yes, top four, not top five.
Because I know what yours is. Yeah. We got it on. Don't you worry about it. There are a few, like, I mean, and we probably could have done this with almost any chapter in Narnia, but just you saying that made me go, wow, there's some really good lines in here. So we're going to structure this episode around these four lines that I've selected, and I'll throw them out in no particular order. But
do it.
When I say line, I'm saying that I'm defining that fairly broadly. Could be a couple lines, could be a little paragraph, you know. But I personally think one of the top four lines in chapter 14 of The Magician's Nephew is the very first one. When Aslan says, "Well done," said Aslan in a voice that made the earth shake. Then Diggory knew that all the Narnians had heard those words, and that the story of them would be handed down from father to son in that new world for hundreds of years and perhaps forever. Whoa. What a reward for Diggory. I know it says that he wasn't conceited and didn't feel prideful or anything because he's saying this to Aslan, but especially as a prequel, I think coming into this as book, I'm of the opinion here, reading this as book six is more powerful than as book one. Knowing, like, we've gotten a sense of what the next couple thousand years of Narnian history is like, and knowing that this is where it starts right here.
I might have a number five for you if you just, like, remind me at the end.
Okay.
We'll see what we get. I want to get through your list.
Sure. I mean, I'm going to go ahead and lump this. I mean, this is like number one and a half because it's very, very, it's very close.
It's a page. This page.
There you go.
Well, no, this is number like one and a half because, I'm numbering them, but they're in no particular order in terms of like which ones I think are the best. But the next one, it is literally just like almost the next paragraph. And, of course, at the end of the previous chapter, you know, Diggory almost was very tempted to take the apple, give it to his mother instead of bringing it to Aslan. But he does bring it to Aslan. And Lewis writes, "Well done, son of Adam," said the lion again, "for this fruit you have hungered and thirsted and wept. No hand but yours shall sow the seed of the tree that is to be the protection of Narnia."
There's so many great aspects of just redemptive narratives throughout the Chronicles. Of course, we have Edmund at the beginning. Eustace is another great one. But Diggory is another great one. I mean, he causes so many of these problems. I mean, almost all of the problems. Obviously, the witch has her own agency. She's her own villain. She is the villain. But he brings in so many problems, but Aslan gives him the opportunity to redeem himself. He allows him. He's also the hero of the story. He's not just the screw up, and that's his legacy.
And kind of like the passage that Glumpuddle was talking about earlier with, it, you know, if you read a little bit longer, it says that this time he found he could look straight into the lion's eyes. He had forgotten his troubles and felt absolutely content. And I really like that use of the words, like, absolutely content. Like, and this is before Aslan, you know, gives, you know, says you can have the honor of planting the tree. This is just when he says, well done. And to me, I really like that choice of words because it shows that Diggory, he has what he needs. He knows he did the right thing. He has received that acknowledgement from Aslan. He has nothing to hide, and that's all he needs, and he's content. And then so, like, having the honor to plant the tree is, like, this extra bonus on top of that for him. So it shows that, you know, he wasn't only satisfied with that. He was just satisfied with having done the job well.
I think it's just really, yeah, it's really beautiful, the kind of relationship we talked about a couple episodes ago. That line, you know, Aslan says, grief is great, you know, only you and I in this world know that yet. And this kind of bond and connection that Aslan and Diggory have here, being the only people in this world that really understand grief. But then there's also this, here is the boy that did it. You know, you've also screwed up my world I just made. And that idea of that, being able to have something of reconciliation where Aslan's like, wow, I know. And he says later in the chapter, I know the choice that you made. And so to have that sort of sense of reconciliation, I think, is really, really powerful. Next line I have on my list, I'm just going to go and read it here. So, we have more silliness with Uncle Andrew in this chapter. We have him in a kind of cage, and
a nice cage, actually.
Yeah, it's like a pretty nice cage, and they throw thistles in there, and they drop nuts on him, and the best one of all, of course, the bear throws a beehive into there.
It's all for Brandy.
I love that.
I guess the beehive must have just been created with the rest of Narnia. Could the bees have made it that quickly?
Don't look into it too much. These are like hyper energetic bees.
Whatever. Anyway,
Narnia is bursting with life. Okay.
All right. So they've been playing around with their pet Uncle Andrew for a while, and Lewis writes, these are the talking beasts, of course. And Lewis writes, they were getting really quite fond of their strange pet and hoped Aslan would allow them to keep it. The cleverer ones were quite sure by now that at least some of the noises which came out of its mouth had a meaning. They christened him Brandy because he made that noise so often.
Yes, that cracked me up.
Thank you, C.S. Lewis, so much for this line. And of course, it's the reversal again of, you know, a couple chapters ago we saw, you know, the animal... Uncle Andrew can't understand what the animals are saying. We know they're saying speech. He just hears growls and other noises. And likewise, they can't understand him. And here we kind of have the final kind of beat in Uncle Andrew's humbling, in that these animals think of him as a pet. So this is kind of the final beat in Uncle Andrew getting his comeuppance for having dabbled in forces he doesn't really understand.
Well, especially also to him, everything is a pet. It's just a pet that he gets to do with it, whether he wills. It's just the hamster, or, you know, or even the children are kind of like his just pets to him, you know.
They're just, yeah, just things he uses to, they're just means to an end.
That he is now the pet and treated much better than any of his pets were, that's for sure.
That's true. I mean, I don't know. I feel bad for the guy. Like, imagine getting a beehive thrown in there. I mean, he's got to have stings and swelling.
Nightmare.
I mean, that's, I actually legitimately
that's not
that
nice.
Yeah, I legitimately feel bad for the guy. I can't imagine he treated his guinea pigs very nicely, but yeah, I feel bad for the guy is all I'm saying. Next line on my list of the top, I have four. I guess you have another one, but I'll just keep saying for now, the top four lines in chapter 14 of The Magician's Nephew. The next one is, so Polly and Diggory are talking to Aslan, and they're saying, is there anything you can do to help Uncle Andrew? Is there anything you can do to make him able to understand? And, you know, Aslan explains, you know, the way Uncle Andrew thinks the world works, it's not exactly true, because in a few days, you know, the song is going to wear off and it's not going to make things grow anymore. And Aslan says, but I cannot tell that to this old sinner, and I cannot comfort him either. He has made himself unable to hear my voice. If I spoke to him, he would hear only growlings and roarings. Oh, Adam's sons, how cleverly you defend yourselves against all that might do you good.
Kind of addresses the question we were talking about a few episodes ago, too, with all the animals growling to him and stuff and how he couldn't understand them. And we kind of talked about why that was. But
yeah, certainly as, again, reading this book for the first time as a parent right now, this line resonates in a different way. Like, oh, my son, how cleverly you defend yourself against all that might do you good. I mean, I've only been a parent for a few years and I only have one. But my summary currently is parenting is trying to trick your child into not committing suicide. Like, trick them into, I have to negotiate with my son to get him to drink water.
Yeah.
To eat.
It's like, the Michael McIntyre skit. He goes, you know, every human needs to be eat, go to the bathroom, be fed, you know, bathe, you know, basic hygiene, and go to sleep. And children make every single one of these things a battle.
Yes.
And like the most basic, no, you have to drink water. No, you have to eat this food. No, you have to go to sleep. No, you have to be clean. You have to go to the bathroom. You know, it's like these.
Yeah, no, absolutely not.
I made the mistake today of I tried to have both kids, I had the 2-year-old and the 4-year-old go to the bathroom at church, and then of course one flushed the toilet when it was the other's turn, and World War III broke out, and people like strangers came to the door to check to see if the children were okay because of the screaming that came out. Like, oh my goodness, like it's fine. It's not fine, but it's fine. You know, it's like, oh my goodness. No one,
we're all surviving. We are not okay, but we are surviving.
But we humanity, we're just our own worst enemy.
In the Talking Beast Facebook group, Elizabeth said, there's a parallel here with the last battle where the dwarves make themselves unable to see the beauty of Aslan's country, just like Uncle Aaron makes himself unable to hear Aslan's voice, and Aslan says he can't do anything about it in either case. So I'm sure we'll revisit this. Thanks for the reminder, Elizabeth. I'm sure we'll revisit this again when we get to that part in our last battle commentary, however many years that takes to get to. Absolutely true.
Kids will be in high school.
Yes.
What commentaries have we not done?
We haven't done Last Battle.
The only one?
Yeah. Oh. You and I did a one episode commentary of Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. This is back when I had.
That doesn't count. We got to go back.
We can. But at the time, I had this delusion that, oh, we can just do like one episode per book to kind of, you know, kill time between the Dawn Treader and Silver Chair movies.
And
there was just clearly no fun in that at all. We definitely got to redo Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, and maybe some of the others too. Because we did Caspian in, I think, 3 parts. I think Dawn Treader was 5 parts. Yeah, so
the only way to do that with Prince Caspian is you watch the BBC Prince Caspian and dissect it into, you know, 20 minutes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so probably after we finally get through the last battle, maybe I'll circle back and we'll just start over again with all three of us.
Yeah. Well, maybe the kids will only be in like elementary at that point.
There you go. That's not too bad.
Not quite high school, elementary.
I'll have my son be the producer.
Oh,
train
and,
well.
Oh, you said that, Rillian, and I heard your voice, and I knew that this podcast would be handed down from father to son in this new world for hundreds of years and perhaps forever.
I need to go back and find some of the old episodes. That'd be weird. That'd be trippy.
It is weird. It's cringy. It's
really cringy. Well, right? We know that.
It's really
we
cringy.
Were all in our teens. How long ago was that?
Well,
oh my
I was
gosh.
Like 16. No, I was like 17, 18.
Mm-hmm. My first one I think was on a landline, just a phone.
Same.
That was it.
Same.
But anyway, yeah. Magician's nephew anyway. Here. The final line on my list is the one you were talking about, Rillian. And let me just give it a little more context here. So, Diggory, you know, Aslan's kind of explaining a little bit about how the Tree of Protection works, that, you know, the witch doesn't dare come within, you know, 100 miles of it, and that's how it's going to keep her away. And this confuses Diggory and Polly, and it's, well, but she ate one. What do you mean she doesn't like the smell of it? And Aslan explains, but Aslan says she has won her heart's desire, and he's referring to, yes, she is going to be immortal. She'll live forever or a long time or whatever. And Aslan says, She has won her heart's desire. She has unwearying strength and endless days like a goddess. But length of days with an evil heart is only length of misery, and already she begins to know it. All get what they want. They do not always like it. Then a little bit later, he says, if any Narnian unbidden had stolen an apple and planted it here to protect Narnia, it would have protected Narnia. But it would have done so by making Narnia into another strong and cruel empire like Charn, not the kindly land I mean it to be. I'd forgotten about that last part. It would have worked, but not in the way that they wanted.
I had forgotten that. Of course, I think it depends on his foreknowledge, but he knew that the witch would steal one of the fruits. Because if not, presumably, it wouldn't have kept her away. But he knew that she would.
Wait. Yeah, let me think.
Or am I wrong?
I think you're right. Let me think this through. So, yeah, that's the reason. Like, what if the witch had not taken one of those fruits and then they planted it? Then it seems like it would not have repelled her in that case, right? Because Aslan's saying that's the very thing that makes it work. So therefore you're saying, well, then he must have known that she was going to eat one of those. Let me read the this to make sure. Where's the thing where he talks about the way it smells?
And then Polly's like, well, she ate one, so it probably won't smell bad to her now. And he's like, no, that's actually why.
Yeah, Polly says, well, she ate one. And then Aslan says, child, that is why all the rest are now a horror to her. That is what happens when you pluck and eat fruits at the wrong time and in the wrong way. The fruit is good, but they loathe it ever after. So that's a very good point, Rillian. I guess we can only suppose. So it's funny, in the previous episode, I was kind of speculating, like, you know, it kind of almost seems like the garden was created just for the purpose of being a test for Diggory. Maybe its actual purpose was to be a test for the witch that he knew she would fail.
Or for both.
Post a comment, people, because this is live right here. Not live, but for us it's live on Talking Beast. I'm making this discovery. So maybe
status
we'll have
check
to
check on Glumpuddle's brain. Mind blown.
Right? You know, it could be the thing. It's like, not that it was placed there for either purpose, but that it's something that's just native to Narnia. Like it's native to...
Well, it's not just the tree, remember? It's the garden or this whole thing around it that was there. You know, it's not just the trees.
So it's like...
And the sign.
Aslan knew that the tree was there, so he surmised that the witch was... Now that the witch was in the land, she was going to go get it. And so Diggory also going was a way to counteract that. It's like, this thing is already there. Now it's been compromised. This is how we can... counteract it, maybe.
I always thought it was fascinating when Aslan, he does tell him what would have happened if he had given it to his mother and how it would have healed her.
Yeah, Elizabeth also asked about this. Well, you know, in Prince Caspian, Aslan said, you know, that, you know, no one has ever told what would have happened, but isn't that exactly what Aslan's doing right here? Is this a gotcha? Did Lewis mess this up, or is there something different?
In this case, he does tell him.
Yes. So my thoughts on this are, I don't think this is Aslan, because we've seen how, you know, omnipotent Aslan is. Like, he knows what happened at the garden, for example, just now. He knows that the witch tempted Diggory, even though he wasn't there. So we know that he has this omnipotence. I don't believe this is Aslan, like, using his omnipotence and looking into the future and saying, hey, there's an alternate reality where this would have happened. I think he's just saying, hey, when you eat the apple, this is what happens. This is how it works. Just like, yeah, I can tell you, you know, if you...
Don't touch the burner. Don't touch the burner. If you do the thing, this bad thing will happen. And then they do the thing.
Yes, I think this is Aslan telling Diggory, if you touch the burner, your hand's going to get burned. Duh, that's how it works. Aslan, the context of this is Aslan explaining how the fruit works.
He's also telling all the other animals there, because presumably all these other animals are there with a tree that they could steal the fruits if they wanted.
True.
Yeah. That's a really good point. So I must say, I mean, I'm not, Elizabeth, you're not the first one to kind of point this apparent, point out this apparent inconsistency. And I've done it several times. I made a joke about it on the podcast several times. But just now, reading it in preparation for this podcast, like 2 days ago, is the first time I went, you know, I think this is different, actually. So it took like 6 or 7 readings and doing a whole chapter by chapter podcast to do it. But
that's why you need to read the Chronicles 6 or 7 times.
I admit it, Jack. You're a good writer. Okay.
After all this time,
I think that Lewis guy actually did know what he was doing after all. So those are my top lines. Did you have another line you wanted to add to that list, Rillian?
You know, I really love the ending where it says Diggory plucked the apple and put it in his pocket. Then he came back to Aslan. "Please," he said, "may we go home now?" He had forgotten to say thank you, but he meant it, and Aslan understood. And I just love that because, one, there's so many little moments of dialogue and character interaction where that is just how people are sometimes. You know, sometimes there's so many emotions, there's so many things going on, and you don't say maybe the most obvious thing, but you mean it. And there's just that unsaid communication between people where some things just don't have, not every single thing has to be laid out and just explained. And I just loved that moment because at this point, like that is like, he of course he's grateful, but the only thing on his mind is he can just say, please, can we go home now after all he's been through?
Yeah. And like, I think their relationship is at a point to where it makes sense. They have this unspoken understanding at this point. There's no need to say, oh, thanks, appreciate that or whatever. I love the relationship here between Aslan and Diggory. I just love it so much.
But there's your fifth line.
I'll take it. I will accept that. So now that's going to be a much more elegant headline to say the top. There's something about top four that would be a little lame. So there you are, ladies and gentlemen, the top five lines in chapter 14 of The Magician's Nephew, the top five list you didn't know you wanted. Here you go. I think the only thing left to talk about is there was an interesting comment on the previous episode. Cody was asking about Frank and Helen. And of course, in this chapter, we see them get their royal robes and all that. And Aslan decided, yeah, we're going to go with the kind of medieval flavor here. Let's go with it. And there you go.
He's not going with a steampunk version of Narnia, apparently.
No.
Could have been so different. But I mean, Aslan could have gone with any aesthetic he wanted, you know? But that's what we're going with. And for some reason, Narnia is going to, fashion's not going to evolve at all over like 1,000 years, but whatever. Okay, let's go with it.
It's a magical land. What else do you want?
When you have flying horses, you don't need trains. Okay. I'm just saying.
They get their royal robes. They also get their crowns. And, you know, I have to admit, this is the first time I actually Googled like what a half sovereign is and realized that they get their crowns from loose change that fell out of Uncle Andrew's pocket.
Yep,
that's where it comes from. So apparently it's if anyone doesn't remember, the animals are turning Andrew upside down because they think that they can't figure out, this is in a couple chapters ago, they can't figure out which side of him is the top, and at one point some loose change falls into the ground and it becomes a gold tree and a silver tree. And that's what the dwarves make the crowns out of. The first king and queen of Narnia got their crowns from loose change in Uncle Andrew's pocket.
I once bought a set in the UK of like all the old currency. So you had like a half crown, a farthing, like all the weird coins and things that they don't have anymore, you know.
But you're like, I knew what that looked like.
I don't know. It just feels a little bit like there's this poetry of, oh, the wardrobe came from the, you know, the tree, you know. Oh, like, no, there's poetry to that. Or there's, you know, son of Adam, you know, Diggory, you should be the one to sow the tree or whatever. And there's just a kind of poetry to it. And then here we have, oh, it's a good thing Uncle Andrew had loose change in his pockets, or who knows what would have happened. They would have gone with, you know, something besides crowns. They might have done something different.
They should do, if they do a movie of this, they should do like branches into the tree, like tree branches of gold and silver. and make like have like a, like an organic looking gold.
So like you're saying like the crown, it's not necessarily metal exactly.
Not like
it's
melted like down of, and like shaping into like a metal crown like we normally see. It should be like a from like made from a gold tree and silver tree. They should do that.
So it should, but it should kind of have an organic and kind of have an organic quality to it. You're saying that's kind of gross. I don't know.
Well, it kind of reminded me like his description of the crowns that were made. He said, you know, they were not like, you know, the big ugly things like modern crowns are. They were, you know, nice and they made you feel nice wearing them. And I was like honestly, the best description I can think of or the best visual I can think of a crown that I think is like that is like the crowns from The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe movie, specifically Susan and Lucy's.
Yeah, that's true.
And that kind of fits like that organic thing because they aren't, they're pretty much just like laurels of like, mm-hmm. you know, flowers and all leaves. Made into crowns.
Poor Peter and Edmund are still stuck with those giant metal spiky things.
They're not too big, though.
It could be like what the crown of England is, where it's like it's this ginormous thing that they can only like here. Take it off.
Yeah, they can't wear it very long.
Take a picture. Okay, we're done.
Yeah, coronate the person, knight the person, then we're done.
Got to do your neck exercises.
Yeah. Actually, I don't think they even knight people wearing the crown anymore. They just like mm-hmm. you know they'll wear a suit and tie. And there's a here you go.
That bit you're talking about, Jim Fanning, reminded me of the bit in The Silver Chair. I think it's towards the end of The Silver Chair where it was, you know, in Narnia, the clothes that look nice are also really comfortable. And so here, so of course mm-hmm. in Narnia, crowns are actually practical and comfortable to wear. And I don't think this is what Lewis was getting at with any of that, but it reminded me of how I kind of think one of the central things that makes Narnia work for me is that it's a monarchy I can believe in. There's all kinds of reasons to be cynical about the idea of having the king and queen that's just going to make all the decisions because absolute power corrupts absolutely. There's all kinds of valid reasons in our world to be skeptical and cynical of that form of government.
Keep going, American. Flesh this out for me.
I know.
I'm listening.
Yes. So I'm saying there's all kinds of valid reasons. But Narnia gives me a monarchy that I don't feel that way about. And it all comes down to Aslan, ultimately. Like, Aslan is the fantasy figure that's like, yeah, but because it's all ultimately under Aslan, and we know that Aslan is not safe, but he's good. We know that Aslan is someone with unlimited power, but is, although he's not safe, he's good, can be trusted with it. We know Aslan... is ultimately humbles himself. We know we see him give his life for Narnia in the first book, meaning Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. And so it's sort of like because we're seeing a monarchy through this fantasy character of Aslan, who is always good. We can believe in it, and it actually works the way it's supposed to. It's kind of like me, like the whole idea of Superman. To me, is that it's, of course, in real life, you couldn't possibly trust a human with that amount of power, but Superman's not human. So the whole idea of Superman is, what if there was someone with that amount of power you actually could trust?
Well, it's like, I mean, honestly, even historically, people have said historically, the best government was the good monarchy, and the worst government was the bad monarchy.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, the best ones are the ones with the good monarch, and the worst ones are the ones with the bad monarch, you know? Because there's no bureaucracy to get in the way of the good thing, and there's no bureaucracy to get in the way of the bad thing either.
Uh-huh. Right. But like that's what I think would be really refreshing if the Narnia movies could do is create a monarchy that you don't feel cynical about, and that you
well,
can really
the books, but the books also
in.
The books cover everything because you have Miraz. Yeah, the Telmarines. Mm-hmm. You know, you have like this long line.
But in terms of Narnia, though, I remember talking to some people who hadn't read the book about Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, but I heard a couple of people say it was just kind of weird, and they were putting the crowns on them, and like they're going to let the kids be kings and queens. I don't know. It's just kind of weird. Now, I mean, I guess that's kind of a whole other discussion. But just in general, wouldn't it be amazing in the age we live in right now? if to make a movie where people could be like, yes, the kings, yes, the queens, this is good, this is the way it should be, and this can work, wouldn't that just be refreshing to believe that for 2 hours before you leave and stop believing it? But
the anti Game of Thrones.
Exactly. That's precisely what it is.
You know what's also funny, though, is I'm not convinced if you look historically, whether you want to go into like ancient Israel or even medieval Europe, I'm not convinced that there is really a good correlation on, well, the people who became kings when they were children actually did a terrible job, and the ones who became kings when they were adults where they had a great job. I don't think that exists at all. So,
okay.
I'm serious.
Okay, I want to come. Okay, maybe we should come back.
That would
to that
be like
in
an interesting history discussion later on, but. But yeah, so I heard that from some people. I'm like, yeah, but the point is that they will listen to Aslan.
Yes,
the
exactly.
Children will listen to Aslan. The adults think they know better.
Without Aslan, if it was just, oh, the kids get to be, you know, kings and queens, I think there'd be reason to, I guess people go, oh, it's a children's story, whatever. But I don't think we have to play the, oh, it's a children's story card with this. I think Aslan is this really compelling fantasy character who is just completely good, and there's enough mystery to him where we can fill in the blanks, and we can say it's not going to go the way that governments go in our world, inevitably. That's kind of the fantasy aspect of this, and I just think it would be really I love the idea of people going to a Narnia movie and for 2 hours or so a monarchy that they can believe in and not be cynical about. I'm just saying for 2 hours. You know, I think that would be really refreshing.
I would love to see a non-cynical Narnia.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
I would love to see that. Because even with...
It's hard not to be cynical. It's really hard.
Even with the original... I say original. Even with the Walden version, there was this trend. You saw it also in the Lord of the Rings films where they were like, well, we can't have a character like just kind of accepting responsibility. We have to have a really, really, really reluctant hero. So they made Peter like extremely reluctant to take on any responsibility. And I think that part of that came from kind of a cynicism in our modern age of why we felt like they just had to... Peter had to be this way, and Aragorn had to be this way in the Lord of the Rings movies. And hopefully we don't have to have a repeat of that.
Yeah, that's a whole episode I'd love to talk about. I mean, it's both. I think what you said is absolutely part of it. And also there's just some, oh, it's just easy drama, you know, to right. have someone, oh, I don't
it's
want to.
Introduce tension. Introduce, let's have the characters fighting each other, you know.
Before we sign off, regarding Frank and Helen, what I wanted to get to there, that was, is Cody.
I thought you were saying Frankenstein for a second, but okay.
Frank and Helen. Frank and Helen. The first king of Narnia was Frank and Helen. thanks
it's
for
too
that
late,
one,
guys.
Ryan.
It's too late.
Anyway,
in the
weekend.
Previous, I was going to say, before we sign off, in the previous episode, there was an interesting comment. Cody asked, presumably, did anybody know Frank and Helen in London? Did they have any friends? And how are those friends going to feel if they just mysteriously
just disappeared?
and then Alice had an interesting reply where she kind of said, well, you know, there was no internet, no phones, not for poor people anyway. And if a neighbor moved out of a city, it basically meant you'd probably lose contact with them forever. So, you know, theoretically, you could keep in touch via letters and stuff. But, you know, she's just kind of saying, you know, maybe it wasn't that common for someone to just vanish. Completely. So probably, oh, they probably moved, you know, back to the country or whatever. So
maybe they were
left
both
all their stuff.
Maybe they were both orphans and they're both only children.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure when they get a Netflix series, I'm sure Greta Gerwig, can you give us an entire episode just on what everyone's reaction was? And but what about but
he's
but,
not well, serious. Don't do a Netflix
but,
show.
But
on
wait
Frank
a second.
Helen.
When they took, joke. But think about when they vanished with the witch. That was there were a lot of people watching. And saw him completely vanish. And we know that Diggory and Polly come back, but
no,
where'd the horse go?
That's the old, well, yeah, actually there were UFO sightings in the late 1800s, and here's one in London.
But no one believed him.
No one believed in alien abductions back then. They didn't know.
No, but everybody saw the horse and the several people just disappear, and they went, I saw that, but I'm not going to say it because people will think I'm crazy, so let's just go about our business.
And they still have asylums at this time and this day and age. And they're going to put me in one, so I'm not going to talk about it.
Okay. All right. That concludes our discussion of the – is it penultimate or pernultimate? How do you say it?
Penultimate.
penultimate chapter in The Magician's Nephew.
Illiterate troglodyte.
We're finally going to wrap this thing up after, I don't remember, it's been at least a few years of going through this book. Join us next time for that conclusion. And if you're interested in a little bit more discussion, we're going to stick around here and talk about a few more things. So see the link in the description for that, for our post-show chatter. Thank you, Patreon supporters. I will read the outro now. We hope you enjoyed this episode of Talking Beast, the Narnia podcast. Visit narniaweb.com to join our community and stay up to date on the latest Narnia news. And visit patreon.com/narniaweb to support this podcast. Please post a comment or question below or in the Talking Beast Facebook group. You can also email us at glumpuddle@narniaweb.com, rillian@narniaweb.com, or jimfan@narniaweb.com. Special thanks to all of our Patreon supporters, especially our Knights of Narniaweb. Until next time, further up and further in.